It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Vice President, members of Congress, the First Lady of the United States. Yeah. And citizens of America, tonight, as we mark the conclusion of our celebration of Black History Month, we are reminded of our nation's path toward civil rights and the work that still remains to be done. Recent threats targeting Jewish community centers and vandalism of Jewish cemeteries, as well as last week's shooting in Kansas City, remind us that while we may be a nation divided on policies, we are a country that stands united in condemning hate and evil in all of its very ugly forms.
All right, that's the way it started last night. Sandy Rios in the morning with you. Donald Trump speaking before a joint session of Congress. Did you see it? If you didn't see it, you need to see it. In fact, we're going to post a link on our Facebook page so that you can watch it. I think every American should, because this is a chance to see Donald Trump without any filter, meaning no one is telling you what to think, how you'd feel about it, catching the worst possible statements, catching the worst possible angles. It's just very different to see a person without where you make your own judgments. And so many people say that this was a sterling speech for him. I feel the same way. It was measured. I've never seen him so low-key, to be honest with you. And it was interesting. You know, I remember when Bill Clinton and even Barack Obama, Bill Clinton primarily, though, would give his speeches, State of the Union, or speak before joint sessions, and he would go on and on and on and on. Some of you don't know that or remember that, but I do. Just love to hear themselves talk. Trump, you know, made use of the words. I mean, I felt the speech was really easy to follow. The transitions from topic to topic were smooth. Whoever wrote that speech did an excellent job, and it's nothing more than really what he's been talking about on the campaign stump. It's not like it's somebody else's thoughts. It is obviously how he feels about how he should address what's going on in this country. But let me just paint the picture a little bit. He walked in, and he was first announced by Paul Irving, who is the sergeant of arms, you know, the president of the United States. And he came in, of course, with his cabinet. He came in with the leadership of the Republican Party behind him. He looked great last night, very presidential. Melania looked radiant, absolutely radiant. I think something's happened with her. It's like, I just think I mentioned that last week when she recited the Lord's Prayer. That wasn't just a recitation. She really spoke it from her heart. I don't know. I'm just telling you. I think that she is radiating something from deep within. So it was beautiful to see. And, of course, they had guests. They had Mrs. Scalia, who cried when she was acknowledged. Antonin Scalia, Justice Antonin Scalia's widow, sitting close to Melania, and then other guests as well, which I'll talk about a little bit later. And the Democrats, surprisingly enough, did not obstruct. I thought they would. They did a few things. They sat down a lot. They did not applaud a lot. Many of the women were dressed in white, supposedly in consonance with the suffragette movement, whatever that means. And so they sat, but they didn't disrupt, which I expected them to do. And so I was very grateful about that. And so the president stood and said what he said, but I want you to hear the next part of his opening statement. Let's listen.
Each American generation passes the torch of truth, liberty, and justice in an unbroken chain all the way down to the present. That torch is now in our hands, and we will use it to light up the world. I am here tonight to deliver a message of unity and strength, and it is a message deeply delivered from my heart. A new chapter. Of American greatness is now beginning. A new national pride is sweeping across our nation, and a new surge of optimism is placing impossible dreams firmly within our grasp. What we are witnessing today is the renewal of the American spirit. Our allies will find that America is once again ready to lead. All the nations of the world, friend or foe, will find that America is strong, America is proud, and America is free.
So that's how it started. And then he went into just tracing the history of the United States. He said, we're going to be celebrating our 250th anniversary, and it will be one of the greatest milestones in history. But he says, what will America look like as we reach our 250th year? What kind of a country will we leave for our children? And then he talks about the things that have gone wrong, about the shrinking middle class, about how we've built one global project after another but ignored the fates of our children in the inner cities of Chicago, Baltimore, and Detroit. We've defended our borders of other nations while leaving our own borders wide open for anyone to cross. We spent trillions of dollars overseas while our infrastructure at home has so badly crumbled. And then he talks about how in 2016 the earth shifted beneath our feet. And then he says, we can really, truly make America great again. And he says, dying industries will come roaring back to life. Heroic veterans will get the care they desperately need. Our military will be given the resources its brave warriors so richly deserve. Crumbling infrastructure, drug epidemic, neglected inner cities. We will keep our promises to the American people. And then he talks about some of the wonderful things that have happened just in the 30 days he's been president. Ford, Fiat Chrysler, General Motors, Sprint, SoftBank, Lockheed, Intel, Walmart have announced they were going to invest billions of dollars in the U.S. and create tens of thousands of new jobs. The stock market has gained almost $3 trillion in value. A hiring freeze on non-military, non-essential federal workers, draining the swamp of government, reducing job-crushing regulations, construction of Keystone and Dakota Access Pipelines, and then on and on. I mean, I could go on and on. They formed a task force for reducing violent crime. And then he talks about immigration, and that's important. So let's turn to that, because this is what he says about what we need to do to start enforcing our laws. Let's listen.
At the same time, my administration has answered the pleas of the American people for immigration enforcement and border security. By finally enforcing our immigration laws, we will raise wages, help the unemployed, save billions and billions of dollars, and make our communities safer for everyone. We want all Americans to succeed, but that can't happen in an environment of lawless chaos. We must restore integrity and the rule of law at our borders. For that reason, we will soon begin the construction of a great, great wall along our southern border. As we speak tonight, we are removing gang members, drug dealers, and criminals that threaten our communities and prey on our very innocent citizens. Bad ones are going out as I speak, and as I've promised throughout the campaign. To any in Congress who do not believe we should enforce our laws, I would ask you this one question. What would you say to the American family that loses their jobs, their income, or their loved one because America refused to uphold its laws and defend its borders.
All right, so that's the first part of it, making the case for informing, really using our immigration laws and applying them to the border and to illegal immigration. Okay, so then he talks about radical Islamic terror, and of course they are now using that term. And in fact, the Pentagon released a statement saying now they're going to say Islamic terror, and they're going to say ISIS and not ridiculous ISIL or whatever the Daesh, I guess, was the other term they used. So this is what he had to say about addressing radical Islamic terror. Let's listen.
Our obligation is to serve, protect, and defend the citizens of the United States. We are also taking strong measures to protect our nation from radical Islamic terrorism. According to data provided by the Department of Justice, the vast majority of individuals convicted of terrorism and terrorism-related offenses since 9/11 came here from outside of our country. We have seen the attacks at home, from Boston to San Bernardino to the Pentagon, and yes, even the World Trade Center. We have seen the attacks in France, in Belgium, in Germany, and all over the world. It is not compassionate, but reckless to allow uncontrolled entry from places where proper vetting cannot occur. Those given the high honor of admission to the United States should support this country and love its people and its values. We cannot allow a beachhead of terrorism to form inside America. We cannot allow our nation to become a sanctuary for extremists. That is why my administration has been working on improved vetting procedures, and we will shortly take new steps to keep our nation safe and to keep those out who will do us harm.
All right, so we cannot allow a beachhead of terrorism to form inside America. We cannot allow our nation to become a sanctuary for extremists. I mean, is this not common sense? And so that's what he was talking about last night. He talked about how he's instructed the Department of Defense to develop a plan to demolish and destroy ISIS. He calls it a network of lawless savages that have slaughtered Muslims and Christians and men, women, and children of all faiths and beliefs. We will work with our allies, including our friends and allies in the Muslim world, to extinguish this vile enemy from our planet. Then he talked about the circumstances that he inherited. Tonight, as I outline the next steps we must take as a country, we must honestly acknowledge the circumstances we inherited. 94 million Americans are out of the labor force. Over 43 million people are now living in poverty, and over 43 million Americans are on food stamps. More than one in five people in their prime working years are not working. We have the worst financial recovery in 65 years, and in the last 8 years, the past administration put on more new debt than nearly all other presidents combined. We've lost more than a fourth of our manufacturing jobs since NAFTA was approved. We've lost 60,000 factories since China joined the World Trade Organization. Our trade deficit in goods with the world last year was nearly $800 billion. And overseas, we inherited a series of tragic foreign policy disasters. Solving these and so many other pressing problems will require us to work past the differences of party. It will require us to tap into the American spirit that has overcome every challenge throughout our long and storied history. We must restart the engine of the American economy. And that was at least part of what happened last night. Stay tuned when we return. Congressman Dave Brat, who was in the audience last night, will join us to describe what he saw and heard in that room. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
These days, health insurance is incredibly expensive, especially if you don't have coverage through your employer. If you're concerned about the costs or the ethical dilemmas of insurance, here's great news. there's an affordable, God-honoring alternative. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing community whose members share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. Best of all, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. If you're a Christian looking for a truly affordable healthcare solution, MediShare is just what the doctor ordered.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Revival has been described as an extraordinary movement of the Holy Spirit producing extraordinary results. Isn't that what we need in America? Well, by God's grace, it can happen.
Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of American Family Association.
Jonathan Edwards was a preacher during the First Great Awakening in America. In his account of what he saw God do, he commented, "The assembly were in tears while the word was preached, some weeping with sorrows and distress, others with joy and love, others with concern for the souls of their neighbors." If only God in His mercy would do that great work again.
If you have a heart to see the Lord bring revival to America, we encourage you to gather with us at Fusion, the Heart Cry for Revival Conference in late April in Asheville, North Carolina. To register or to find out more, go to heartcryforrevival.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Dr. Robert Bowen. I am the Dean of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and I'm an Associate Professor of Physiology. So one of the benefits of being a faculty member at TMU is not only are we allowed to speak the gospel in the classroom and within our areas of discipline, we're encouraged to do so. Everybody needs to know the love of Christ. And so I try to incorporate in my classes, and one of the places that I incorporate in the most is in my office when I have students come in.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu. Today.
President Trump delivered one of the most inspirational and uplifting speeches I've heard in years. It was emotional. It was heartfelt. It was a moment to affirm the most exceptional nation on earth. It was a moment to honor the sacrifice of an American family. There was sustained applause for the widow of Navy SEAL Ryan Owens, a man who laid down his life for his country, for our freedom. A truly extraordinary moment, an American moment. President Trump reminded us that we are one people, that we all bleed the same blood, that we were all made by the same God. And together we will begin a new chapter of American greatness. Last night, Donald Trump erased any lingering doubts about the legitimacy of his election. He is our president, the president of these great United States. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Everything that is broken in our country can be fixed. Every problem can be solved. And every hurting family can find healing and hope. Our citizens deserve this and so much more. So why not join forces and finally get the job done and get it done right?
All right, so that's how it went down last night with President Trump addressing both houses, both chambers of Congress. And it was interesting to watch from home, but it's so much better to be in that room. And so I asked Congressman Dave Brat from the 7th District of Virginia, who was front and center. I saw him once passing by on the screen, looking pretty content, but we'll ask him. Congressman Brat, what did you think?
Hey, Sandy, I absolutely loved it. I mean, it was just all positive, like your show, just a renewal of the American spirit, right? I mean, he just gave hope and faith to folks in the inner city. I mean, it's going to be an irony of ironies for the left, right? It's kind of like Nixon going to China, unexpected. If Donald Trump is the guy who, you know, makes our inner city streets safe and gets the kids a great education and makes them productive entrepreneurs, we got a new economy ahead of us, right? Because those kids are going to be our economy. So that speech was just, I mean, it was optimistic, a new chapter on American greatness beginning. It just pumped us all up. And then a couple of guys sitting next to me were tearing up when he introduced some of those heroes up in the audience.
Yep.
I mean, it was inspiring.
It really was. You know, I before you joined me, I was just remembering how it was when President Clinton used to speak, and he would go on and on and on and on. And, you know, sometimes the words were eloquent, but they were nothing. They were just words. And I felt that way with Obama also. But it maybe it's hard for me to be objective, but it just seemed to me there was such a great meaning behind the things that he said and passion. And he was very low-key, didn't you think? It was pretty low-key Donald Trump.
Yeah, no, it was. He wasn't, you know, I mean, you can tell when he's campaigning and this, but the power just came through in every piece. You know, securing the homeland, fixing immigration, fixing education, doing the tax cuts, repealing Obamacare. I mean, it was just a hammer, low-key, but it was optimistic, and the Republicans were as happy as you could have it. And the Dems even acknowledged, even MSNBC this morning, they're having a hard time saying anything bad.
You know, the couple of times the camera panned to some of the leaders, Nancy Pelosi's face, oh, she looked really dejected. She looked miserable.
Right,
and some
right.
of the others,
it's
you know.
Priceless.
But you know what? The thing of it is, I really expected them, meaning the Democrats, to disrupt last night, and they did not. That surprised me.
Yeah, it did. Me too. Right? They all wore the white suits last night, so I thought we're going to be in for some trouble. But so I'm happy that it turned out great.
Yeah, well, let's talk about policy, because he laid out a plan. Of course, he's been saying that we've spent so much on overseas building nations, and we've spent so little on our infrastructure. He talks about Dwight Eisenhower being the last president, and that was in the 50s, the general who fought World War II, overseeing building highways and infrastructure, and it hasn't been done since then. But it's expensive, and you're an economist, and I wonder what your thoughts are about his plans to rebuild the infrastructure.
Yeah, well, he's got a few very bright guys that ran capital markets, you know, in the trillions and trillions of dollars out there. And so he's got the right guys in place. And his phrase last night was interesting. He didn't say the government is going to spend a trillion. He said we're going to do a trillion worth of infrastructure stuff, at least, probably. And so he's going to look for ways where the federal government can throw in and match the states and the private sector and, you know, help sweeten the pot somewhat, but we don't have the money. So you're right. I mean, there's not $1 trillion. Like, we're already spending $1 trillion more than we take in, and so that'll always be the hard spot. But he's got some bright guys that I think will figure out a way to get the private sector to build a lot of that infrastructure with limited federal government involvement.
The whole idea of using private money for that is interesting. Well, you know that'll happen. There'll be all these guys who want a bridge named after them, or, you know, you can see our highway named for them, and they'd pay for it. I can see wealthy individuals wanting to actually pitch in and make that happen.
And you can do toll roads, toll bridges, subways. You know, it could be a lot of it can be user pay. You know, matched with state pay, matched with the feds, and we'll see what he comes up with.
Now, on Obamacare, because that's a tremendous concern to all of us, that whole repeal,
yep.
we're totally on board with, but the replace part is making us a little nervous here. So he talked about it last night, and he laid out at least his principles. Now, before going into this, Congressman, the criticism is, and I heard it again before he spoke. The Congress is waiting for the president to give a detailed plan. He needs to give a plan. Why hasn't he given a plan? I thought his the principles he laid out last night were pretty good. I don't know how you feel about them. It seemed like a market plan to me. Am I missing something?
Well, that's the language, but there's a. The Republican leadership leaked a plan that came out from Politico about 3 days ago, and it was 2 weeks old. And that plan was basically Obamacare light, and that had tax credits in it. But we also have a very free market plan from Rand Paul on the Senate side, one of our heroes. And then Mark Sanford on the House has a companion bill, and he's in the Freedom Caucus. And we use tax credits, but they're limited targeted tax credits, and they don't create a new entitlement program. The leadership program has refundable tax credits that just go out regardless of income, et cetera. And, boy, we do not think that's the way to go, right? If President Trump starts out with a new tax increase and a new entitlement program on the first major bill, I don't think any president wants that wrapped around him. And so Trump's principles were compatible with both plans. And so that's I'm hoping he means the free market path, because he does not want to own Trump care and then have death spirals coming on in a few years after he owned it.
You know, from my perspective, it seems like it's an interesting dance going on with the Freedom Caucus, which is the most conservative group of House members, and the leadership. Because the president, it seems, has forged relationships with both of you. Mick Mulvaney, after all, is part of the cabinet now. And so I don't know if I'm misreading that, but he really is sort of, am I wrong, making friends with all of you? And so it's a little mystery as to which way he's going to come down on some of these things.
Yeah, no, we're definitely part of the story right now, and that's great. And Sean Hannity had several of us on last night asking similar questions you are right now about the Obamacare piece. But Mick came out with a defense plus up of $50 billion yesterday, but you got to pay for it. And he said, we're going to find the pay-fors in the State Department and a bunch of other agencies. And so that's some good news, right? And so that'll be Trump's a business guy. And he just wants to go build great stuff and fix stuff. And, boy, I like that practical dimension. That's just brand new, right, instead of having Harvard law professor in there. Now we got a guy who builds stuff, and he wants to get on it. And so that's great. But the only problem is in the business sector, you got to go out and get that bond, and you own it, right? And so, but at the federal government level, you can just print money. So that's the scary part for all of us, right? So we're going to go do a bunch of stuff, and then how you pay for it, that's going to be the big question going down the pike.
You know, I thought that the way he laid out the unfair trade, he said, I'm for free trade, but not unfair trade. The way he laid that out, I thought was a great, like, 101 on trade for Americans. He's just plain language, and the disparity. He gave that example of Harley-Davidson motorcycles. Anyway, you're an economist. What did you think about what he said about that and how he explained it?
No, it's great. I mean, and it's funny. The world's experts, you know, were just mocking him 2 years ago and 1 year ago. And now everyone flipped over to Trump trade theory, right? I mean, that's the funniest thing I've ever seen. And, I mean, my whole thing is he explains it in just a normal way. Easy to understand, practical way when he says the fair trade, but it's complex too, right? Because we don't have free markets in our own country, and all these elites have been saying we got to have free trade with the rest of the world, right? With China, whatever. Well, our guys and women and small businesses are paying $2.5 trillion in regulatory burden every year, $2.5 trillion in regulations, and then they've got the tax code on their back and they got the red tape on their back. And then we tell these guys, and there's no free markets here, right, internally. And then we have the gall to say, good luck, guys. Go out and trade with the rest of the world. China and India doesn't have any of these regulations and the costs, so their products are way cheaper than ours. And so Trump, he encapsulates this kind of stuff in two sentences. I mean, it's just phenomenal to see.
You know, I have to say that it's been my impression that there is the leadership in the House and the Senate, meaning Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan and their consigliere, whatever that word is, you know, just speak of Trump still with a little disdain, a little humor. And I just wonder if last night might have been a turning point. What do you think?
Yeah, I do. Because, I mean, we've all been going out and just getting annihilated at our town halls, right? I mean, people can go check it at DaveBratt.com if you want to, you know, you'll have half laugh and half cry. But the indivisible group show up in the back row, put up the red cards, and as soon as you start talking, they boo. No matter what you say, they just boo you off the stage. And their goal is to shut down the town hall. So they, first of all, demand that you have a town hall, and then they shut down the town hall. And then, after you can only give a 20-second answer, the mainstream press comes in and says, Dave Bratt gave short answers. And you're like, oh, my word. I mean, it's just fake news, right? The Washington Post was especially egregious. And so Trump last night disarmed them all. I mean, he hit it out of the park on that, and he knows what he's doing, right? So the left wants to be angry and upset, and Trump diffused a lot of that last night. He spoke to the whole country. He said, here's what I'm going to do, very clearly. He had a positive tone with a lot of hope for what we can all do together if you get over your past gripes. And he was kept pointing over to the Democratic side, so we were just laughing. But he did it. He wasn't condescending. He just said, look, here's what we're going to do. And if you want on board, it'd be good to have you. So I think he diffused a lot of that anxiety and political tension out there last night. The left is going to have a much harder time, calling this guy unhinged and all this stuff they've been doing. Everybody loved it last night. So
yes.
It was a home run.
Yeah, I agree. And I was thinking about the world leaders who, like, especially in Britain, where they were saying they couldn't allow President Trump to speak in their parliament because, he's not worthy. So I was just thinking, I hope they're watching last night and perhaps they'll view him differently as well. Congressman Brad, I know you got to go, and we appreciate your time always. The 7th District and DaveBratt.com. DaveBratt.com. Anything that I'm leaving out?
No, you did great. I mean, he tied everything together. That's what's been missing. And so you just tied it all together for your folks. And God bless you and all the work you do and the folks out there listening. Thank you very much, Sandy.
Thank you, Dave. Take care, and we'll talk to you soon.
You bet.
All right. So on the issue of immigration, of course, there are two parts to this. There's the illegal immigration, which I talk about a lot, but there's also legal immigration. And Donald Trump actually touched on that, too, and explained the problem. And I think you should hear this. This is clip 6.
I'm going to bring back millions of jobs. Protecting our workers also means reforming our system of legal immigration. The current outdated system depresses wages for our poorest workers and puts great pressure on taxpayers. Nations around the world, like Canada, Australia, and many others, have a merit-based immigration system. It's a basic principle that those seeking to enter a country ought to be able to support themselves financially. Yet in America, we do not enforce this rule, straining the very public resources that our poorest citizens rely upon. According to the National Academy of Sciences, our current immigration system costs American taxpayers many billions of dollars a year. Switching away from this current system of lower-skilled immigration and instead adopting a merit-based system, we will have so many more benefits. It will save countless dollars, raise workers' wages, and help struggling families, including immigrant families, enter the middle class, and they will do it quickly, and they will be very, very happy indeed. I believe that real and positive immigration reform is possible as long as we focus on the following goals: to improve jobs and wages for Americans, to strengthen our nation's security, and to restore respect for our laws. If we are guided by the well-being of American citizens, then I believe Republicans and Democrats can work together to achieve an outcome that has eluded our country for decades.
All right, so that's what he talked about, legal immigration. Then he also talked about violence and police. He talked about all the people being killed in Chicago. He talks about how it's not acceptable. And he says we have to create a future. We must work with, not against, the people and the men and women of law enforcement. And he went on to talk about their service to the country. And then he pivoted to illegal immigration crime. And we're going to come back with that in a second and also highlight the sterling moment of the evening, which we'll play in just a second. So stay tuned. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
I'm a widow. I've worked for a bank for 31 years, and I've been retired now for 10 years.
Myrtle Norris comments on her experience with the AFA Foundation.
I had a lot of financial questions, and Dan Celia was, he answered my questions, and he helped me with a lot of decisions that I made. And then the charitable gift came up, and he explained that to me. I decided to get it, and I'm sure glad I did, because I know now that money is in a place that I know God wants it to be, and also get my monthly income from it. I believe in the AFA and what they're doing, because they're working for us.
Learn how the AFA Foundation can work for you. You can contact the AFA Foundation through Facebook, on our website, afafoundation.net, or call us at 800-326-4543, extension 345. Thank you for supporting the American Family Association.
Is God calling you to pursue theological graduate education? What's keeping you from taking the first step? Is it time? What if you could choose from flexible class options? Is it money? What if competitively priced seminary offered academic scholarships? Do you think you're alone? What if your classmates were just like you, balancing careers and families with seminary? Hello, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Take the first step. Visit wbs.edu.
The financial world certainly can be intimidating, and our livelihood, of course, depends upon it, but God is in control of all things. Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. I take your calls every day and give you answers from a biblical perspective and break down the day's financial numbers to help keep you informed. Financial Issues, every weekday morning at 8 o'clock Central Time and Saturday mornings, 10 o'clock Central Time on American Family Radio.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. When the Washington State Supreme Court ruled against a Christian florist whose faith prevented her from participating in a same-sex wedding, a warning shot was sent across the bow of the First Amendment. Christians are on the verge of losing our religious liberty. While we have a new president, activist judges and past policies are still wreaking havoc on religious freedom. That's why it's imperative that President Trump sign an executive order to help protect the first freedom guaranteed in the Constitution, the free exercise of religion. During his campaign, President Trump said, quoting, "The first priority of my administration will be to preserve and protect our religious liberty for the benefit of everyday Americans," unquote. Let's encourage President Trump to keep his promise. Call President Trump asking him to sign a religious freedom executive order. Call 202-456-1111. 202-456-1111. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The highlight of the President's address to Congress last night was his tribute to fallen Navy SEAL Ryan Owen. He underscored thereby his appreciation for the sacrifice of all those who serve our country and the contribution they make to protecting the rest of us in a dangerous world. In the process, President Trump made the case for supporting those who, like Chief Petty Officer Owens, go into harm's way and deserve all we can do to equip, train, and otherwise ensure they are ready to defeat our enemies, foreign and domestic. Importantly, the President also reaffirmed his administration's view that prominent among those foes are radical Islamic terrorists. He thereby allayed concerns that he would succumb to pressure from inside and outside his administration to revert to the vapid, clueless, and futile policies of his predecessors. God bless him and America. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Well, the President spoke to the joint session of Congress last night, and we are going to put that link on our Facebook page because, honestly, I think you should see it. You know, I can't tell you everything he said. I can't really paint a complete picture of what took place last night, but I think every American citizen should see this. And so one thing I noticed, just a couple of little color things I noticed last night. I mentioned already that Nancy Pelosi was very, very glum. Ted Cruz was clapping heartily. And I just thought of the irony of that. Isn't that something? You know, he suffered under the blows of Donald Trump's ire and really mistreatment as much as anyone. But things have changed. Things have really altered and changed. And by the way, some of Cruz's top people have gone to work for Donald Trump. And I know that Senator Cruz is working closely with the Trump administration. It's just amazing. It is an amazing thing. And so I saw that. Joe Manchin lit up like a Christmas tree when Donald Trump mentioned coal mining. And I thought that was really nice to see, too. He jumped up and he was clapping. Of course, those are his people who've been devastated by the Obama policies on the coal industry. When Maureen Scalia wept, it was very poignant to me, too, knowing that her husband died so unexpectedly. What I don't even know how long ago, maybe 6 months ago now, it seems. All right, so that those are just some interesting things that happen. But the president, of course, one thing he said that I don't think I'm going to be able to play for you, he says, my job is not to represent the world. My job is to represent the United States of America. Now, getting down into policy, I told you before the break, he talked about how we must work with and not against the men and women of law enforcement. Then he went on to say that we are going to begin, we are creating an office to serve American victims of illegal immigrant crime. It's called VOICE, Victims of Immigration Crime Engagement. And then he went on to introduce Jameel Shaw, Susan Oliver, and Jenna, her daughter, and Jessica Davis. And they have all had children or husbands who have been killed by illegal immigrants. Susan Oliver and Jessica Davis had husbands were policemen who were killed by an illegal immigrant who had been released twice, arrested and released twice, had a long record, and he killed him in cold blood. Jameel Shaw has been on my show before. His son was, I believe, a senior in high school, just a really great kid. He was coming home from school, and he was shot dead by an illegal immigrant, just a random shooting. And so they're starting this office, Victims of Immigration Crime Engagement. But the most beautiful moment of the evening, which many of you have probably heard about by now, but if you haven't, you need to. And that was Ryan Owens, who was a Navy SEAL, was killed in Yemen. You've probably seen his picture, heard about it. It was an operation that the administration said was very, very successful in gaining lots of intelligence to fight Islamic terror. And the father of Ryan Owens then has spoken out publicly, refused to go to the White House, is blaming the president, and generally unhappy about what's happening. Carrie Owens, the wife of Ryan, was sitting in the balcony near Melania Trump last night. Beautiful girl. She was sitting right next to Ivanka. And so this transpired. It actually took a lot longer than we've got a shortened clip because it took a long time. There was so much applause. But I wanted you to hear how this transpired when the president acknowledged Karen Owens. Let's listen.
We are blessed to be joined tonight by Karen Owens, the widow of U.S. Navy Special Operator, Senior Chief William Ryan Owens. Ryan died as he lived, a warrior and a hero, battling against terrorism and securing our nation. I just spoke to our great General Mattis, just now, who reconfirmed that, and I quote, Ryan was a part of a highly successful raid that generated large amounts of vital intelligence that will lead to many more victories in the future against our enemy. Ryan's legacy is etched into eternity. Thank you. Thank you. And Ryan is looking down right now, you know that, and he's very happy because I think he just broke a record. For as the Bible teaches us, there is no greater act of love than to lay down one's life for one's friends. Ryan laid down his life for his friends, for his country, and for our freedom. And we will never forget Ryan. To those allies who wonder what kind of a friend America will be, look no further than the heroes who wear our uniform.
So what you didn't hear with that, because I asked Adam to shorten it, Corinne, I guess it's pronounced Corinne, just first couldn't even stand. And then she stood, and when she did stand, she raised her hands and looked up to the sky. I don't know if she was praying or she was you know, mouthing words to her dead husband. I'm not sure. I've heard it reported differently. So I'm not sure, but let's just say that the grief was so apparent. Any of you who have grieved recognize the look and certainly relate to the feeling of overwhelming grief. And so the whole audience just poured themselves into just the applause went on and on and on. It was there. What can you do? How can you comfort someone who's had such a loss so recently? Then the simple act of acknowledging and clapping. And so that's what took place. And again, Ivanka Trump was right next to her, which I thought was very interesting. Women who are probably about the same age, very different circumstances. And Ivanka trying to reach out to her. So that was really probably the main most moving, it was the most moving moment of the evening. And then President Trump moved to his conclusion, and I wanted you to hear it. And so we're going to start it maybe a little early. It's long. We're going to play it in two clips. But I wanted you to hear how he wrapped up his speech last night. This is clip 12.
Hopefully, the 250th year for America will see a world that is more peaceful, more just, and more free. On our 100th anniversary in 1876, citizens from across our nation came to Philadelphia to celebrate America's centennial. At that celebration, the country's builders and artists and inventors showed off their wonderful creations. Alexander Graham Bell displayed his telephone for the first time. Remington unveiled the first typewriter. An early attempt was made at electric light. Thomas Edison showed an automatic telegraph and an electric pen. Imagine the wonders our country could know in America's 250th year. Think of the marvels we can achieve if we simply set free the dreams of our people. Cures to the illnesses that have always plagued us are not too much to hope. American footprints on distant worlds are not too big a dream. Millions lifted from welfare to work is not too much to expect. And streets where mothers are safe from fear, schools where children learn in peace, and jobs where Americans prosper and grow are not too much to ask. When we have all of this, we will have made America greater than ever before. For all Americans, this is our vision. This is our mission. But we can only get there together. We are one people with one destiny. We all bleed the same blood. We all salute the same great American flag. And we all are made by the same God.
All right, so that's the first part of his closing, and of course he wasn't finished. It's just very moving. He talks about, you know, I think that part of what we lose in the American story is all the great inventions of the turn of the century. If you don't remember, and I don't think kids are being taught this, it was a big deal when I was growing up. The story of Thomas Edison discovering electricity, the story of Albert Einstein, who of course was not American, but the discoveries of that turn of the century were just unbelievable. The invention of the cotton mill, the Ford, inventing the car, the automobile, just all of those things, the airplane, the Wright brothers, just changed our lives forever. And most of that entrepreneurship and invention came out of the freedom that America enjoyed. People, for the first time, had a right to their own ideas. That wasn't the case in the old country. Our founding fathers, one of the very things that they emphasized. Then how would you know? I know this because I did some work in the patent on the last patent bill. Our founding fathers were very clear. They emphasized the importance of intellectual freedom so that if you had an idea, you should take ownership. Because in the old country, the king owned everything that you did. So you have a great idea, good idea, I'll just take it, which is what major corporations have been doing actually in international interests in the last few years. We have lost the boundaries of that. But think, what happens when people are unleashed, when their abilities and their God-given talents and their insight that only they have, only Thomas Edison was able to perfect the whole idea of electricity, and Alexander Graham Bell, the telephone, just think when you're unleashed, what you can do. It really is an unbelievable story of what America has contributed to the world in invention. And so he's just painting a picture of what it could be in the future if we were free, if we were safe and free and not in debt, and we had military strength to protect ourselves, and we had borders to protect us from the southern, and we kept out the drugs, and we stopped the crime, then we could be free too. And that's what he's just painting, that picture. Let's listen to the rest.
When we fulfill this vision, when we celebrate our 250 years of glorious freedom, we will look back on tonight as when this new chapter of American greatness began. The time for small thinking is over. The time for trivial fights is behind us. We just need the courage to share the dreams that fill our hearts, the bravery to express the hopes that stir our souls, and the confidence to turn those hopes and those dreams into action. From now on, America will be empowered by our aspirations, not burdened by our fears, inspired by the future, not bound by failures of the past, and guided by a vision, not blinded by our doubts. I am asking all citizens to embrace this renewal of the American spirit. I am asking all members of Congress to join me in dreaming big and bold and daring things for our country. I am asking everyone watching tonight to seize this moment, believe in yourselves, believe in your future, and believe once more in America. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless the United States.
And with that, it was over. And interestingly enough, of course, the Republicans were cheering. The Democrats filed out immediately and emptied the chamber of their side. I thought that was interesting, but I think they were dejected because the speech really was, as you heard, a beautiful outreach, a beautiful, who could dispute? When he starts talking about immigration, he says, what do you say to future generations who have no opportunity because we did not, you know, protect our own borders and protect our own people? How would you answer that? What about these victims of, you know, one of the things he said was, we're going to put the spotlight on Americans who have lost children by the crime of illegal immigrants. This has been blocked out. Not all illegal immigrants. This has been blocked out by the news media. He said, we're going to stop that. We're going to make sure people know this, and we're going to protect our country. You know, who wouldn't be in favor of that? Well, interestingly enough, the left is not in favor of it. But of course, when they are exposed, when their deeds and their ideas are exposed, no one can defend, you know, not defending your own home, not defending your own country. It's just part of our human nature that we want to defend our own families and our country. America is our own family, given to us by God. We were placed here. We were born here. We didn't plan this. This was just something that God granted those of us that are American-born citizens. And we need to be good stewards of that and use it for the benefit not only of our own people, but of course the world, which is what we have historically done. So once we get our ship righted, then we can help the world again. All right, well, I hope you'll listen to the speech in its entirety. We'll put a link on our Facebook page. Share it with people. Encourage them. People that, you know, hate Donald Trump and insist that they watch that, or encourage them to watch that and just make up their own minds. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.